Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday Morning MV Pro Call. Today is May 29th, and I'd like to welcome those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do as well as, those of you that are live, as well as those of you listening to this recording. You'd think, after saying this for 20 years close to, you'd think I would have my morning opening down. So, good morning, everybody. Those of you listening here live, yay, glad you're here. Those of you listening recording, awesome. I love that you guys are taking the time to do it and you find value. Please reach out to me. Let me know if there's any topics that you want to talk about or whatever. And I do have a couple announcements. First off, we have completely revamped finished our installer schedule for pretty much the remainder of the year. So if you are looking for either custom training, installer classes, or sales training, or service training, or any of that stuff, please take a look at the calendar or reach out to me if we need to make adjustments for your team. We would absolutely love to host you at our incredible facility. Also, within the next week or so, by necessity, I will be completely revamping MotorVitality.com. So doing some stuff in the back end first, but you may see some if you visit MotorVitality.com, you may see some glitches, some pages may look a little strange, might get temporarily an offline error, like a 404 error. If that happens, just refresh the page and you'll probably – so I'm not taking any of the content off, but I am doing quite a bit of back-end stuff on it. So if you happen to notice any of that, don't panic. We're making it better and cleaner and really changing a lot of stuff on it. So to really provide the resources that you all need, that the industry needs, industry-specific resources and a place that people can go there. So with all of that, I'm going to start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, as if my rambling isn't normal. that's by asking, is there anything that happened this last week that or anything you learned last week that you wish you had known before, anything that happened that's worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can do to help you? Any questions you might have?
I don't know the designation of the terminology of a treatment system that I'm working on for a winery. They use 0.45 and 0.6 UM filters, which helps with the sterilization process. And I had a customer, you know, hard water going across these things. And I was going, man, it's a very low micron rated filter, thinking RO. But after doing my research and looking at the company that produces these filters, softened water does the job. And the filters will not plug. I am still in the process of quoting this, but more to come on that. But it's very interesting.
Interesting. So what is the designation of the filter?
It is used for, what did it say here? No, and just kind of almost speaking out of turn. It's used for the sterilization process of water and wine in a wine bottling facility.
Interesting. And they're saying softened water works fine for that.
Yes, softened water will work fine going across these filters, but anything with a high hardness level.
Yeah.
And I did do some research on the 0.45 and the 0.6. I'm trying to pull it up on my research here. It says if I'm below 200 ppm in TDS, I'm going to be just fine. You know, 500,
really?
I might have something to be concerned about.
Yeah.
But these filters will have good longevity.
I'll be daggone.
And then
nice.
Yeah, I was researching calcium, magnesium, and then softened water in regards to going across these filters. And it's very interesting. It's cool stuff.
And they sterilize. These filters will sterilize.
Yeah, these are. Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. So at what level do you know what level of sterilization? I mean, when you say sterilize, I think, is it, you know, is
I'm
it?
I'm thinking no bacteria, no nothing, you know.
Yeah, you think no microbiological.
Colloidal matter. Yeah, no colloidal matters.
Wow. Interesting. That's,
yeah.
That's kind of interesting. It would be interesting to hear what volume. What's that?
And it's hot water going across these filters. And this guy's got such a fun configuration that he's got four inline instant hot commercial heaters.
Interesting.
Softening system there to pre-treat those, because those things are going to fail on him as well. He's spending a lot of money on just decalcification of those heaters. And then his plumbing configuration is such that he needs another softener on the other side of the building because he's using that water on that side as well.
Interesting. You know, wine stuff is like beer and coffee, frankly. There's so much that can go into it in that, you know, water impacts. I mean, I learned, it's been a couple of years ago, about vegan wine. I would have thought all wine was vegan, but apparently not. There's sometimes in the process of making the wine, you know, they use non-vegan stuff. So it's actually kind of interesting, that whole process. Thank you, Paul. Keep us updated. And if you learn the new technologies, that's pretty cool. Anybody else?
Well, I will.
So I had an experience this week that is just worth, we've talked about this, and I don't think it's worth doing an entire topic on because we've talked about it quite a bit, although certainly interested in any stories you guys have. I just had a couple little things to talk about, thinking that it might spawn some conversation this morning. But I went out and did a plumbing assessment for a potential client, a customer, last week, and, you know, tested the water. They had an old system in there that clearly, just based on everything, wasn't doing anything and hadn't been for some time. They had just a touch of sulfur, about 2 parts per million of iron, and 37 grains of hardness. So, you know, pretty rough water, actually. And I mean, not the worst I've ever seen, but it was definitely pretty bad. And this house, probably 50 years old, and hadn't really ever had anything in it that was working great. But I tested water at the kitchen sink and, you know, got my readings, determined that the softener they had, which they had bypassed some time ago, you know, wasn't doing anything. So went out this week to do the install. We put in an AIO system, softener, and a reverse osmosis, of course. When I completed the installation, and this house, it was crazy. A lot of it was run in flex copper, you know, which I hate because you can't, you know, if it corrodes or if it gets, it's so thin and you can't, you know, if you barely touch the stuff sometimes, it leaks develop. And I had made a note of some of that and made sure that I was going to, you know, as a rule, when I install, if the house has done it, we've talked about this a little bit before too, I think, but if the house is done in copper, I like to install in copper. If it's done in PEX, then I'll install in PEX. And, you know, and even trying to use the same fittings that, you know, if they're using expansion, then I'll use expansion. If they're using crimp, you know, I try and use the same style of plumbing that's in there. Where I was able to put the system in, the softener and the AIO, it was regular 3/4 inch copper. So that was not a problem. But so the install was pretty seamless. Mounted the RO in the basement, ran it up to the sink. It was nice. They had a soap dispenser that they hated and never used. So it's perfect. I didn't have to drill through granite and went up, you know, put the, everything was, went really smoothly. I went and tested the water, you know, because there is the checklist. That there's the end of the job. So, you know, we talked about plumbing assessments a couple weeks ago, the importance of going through the plumbing assessment and checking it and testing the water and making sure the locations are there and pictures and all of that. So I tested the, you know, I follow the checklist when I'm done with the installation as well. It took a normal amount of time. I went and tested the water at the end, pretty excited that, there was going to be such a significant difference of this thing, and there was no difference at all, not a thing. In fact, the kid, there was the young man, the son, in his 20s there that was helping me, there was no water whatsoever coming out of the bathroom faucet and out of the kitchen faucet either, neither one. And so there was nothing. And so I promptly discovered a couple things. First off, there was so much crap in these lines, in the water lines, so much iron, all this stuff in the water lines. I mean, I went, you know, when they had no water, we went and turned the water on everywhere else in the house. And all the other faucets, the shower in the bathroom that didn't have water, the shower had water, but the bathroom sink did not. And so it was just because of all the stuff in the lines, the sediment, the debris, all the crap in the lines that had gotten. So that was kind of a lesson learned for me. I don't know if you guys are doing this or not, but those of you in sales or service or both or installing, when you have that kind of water where there's evidence of it in the toilets and everything else, remember, when you're cutting into these lines that haven't been cut into in a long time and you're shutting the water down, you know, when you're draining all the water out of these lines, when you put the water back in those lines, it is going to break up a lot of that stuff. And those, especially already mostly clogged faucet heads or aerators, I mean, it will completely shut the water down. Have you guys seen that before, where you've done the installation and suddenly you turn the stuff back on and it is completely shut down a faucet or a shower head or something like that? You guys seen that? It was as bad as I have ever seen it on this one. So I discovered that. So I took off I disconnected the head on the kitchen faucet, turned that off. I'm getting a little background noise here, you guys, on there. So I don't know if you hit either mute your phone or star six if you can. But anyway, I took the faucet off of this thing, and sure enough, that's what it was. There was now water coming out of the faucet, and so I was able to test the water there. Now thinking that it was going to not smell and that there was not going to be any hardness in there, because I let the water run for quite a while to get all the hard water out of the lines, and I tested the water, and first off, it still had a little odor, so that was a little concerning to me. And I did the hardness test, and I kept putting the drops in there. I got it. I got 37 drops again. I did so I went down to the softener and, looked at it. Any ideas what was up here, what was going on? Anybody have an idea? Something I have seen in Iowa a lot, and I see it in Minnesota, Wisconsin. Don't often see it in Michigan, but I have run into it. Any guesses?
Was there a research line or something backfeeding into the water supply?
So backfeeding? No, it's a little more simple than that. Somewhere along the line, and actually as I looked at this, somewhere along the line, somebody made the decision that they wanted hard water going to the kitchen sink. So they had, when I went back down, and the way I kind of determined this, and this is really important for those of you out there who do follow-ups, you go out after the sale, you know, I mean, this one was an easy one to miss because there was such a hodgepodge of plumbing in there. I still, no excuse, I should have done a more thorough job and looked at this when I did my plumbing assessment. But I think it does show that it can be missed. It's why we need to have so many eyes. It's why as sales professionals, we need to be out there doing a thorough plumbing assessment. And it's why as installers, we also need to take a look at the plumbing, but we have to test the water when we're done. We've got to look at it. So as I went a little further, what I saw was somewhere along the line, somebody had actually, there was a little stub they had cut the line that would have been treated water going to the kitchen faucet and run a flex, a 3/8 CTS flex copper line over to, so this already was narrow and thin, and they'd run that up into the kitchen. So they had not had at all, they had not had, I mean, no wonder the kitchen faucet was so destroyed, because they just did not have any ever treated water running through that faucet. It was just so, so bad. Now, here was my dilemma. You know, I promised them that they were going to have better water. And so, and I didn't have the parts. I didn't with me for the three. So this install that would have been done, you know, mid-afternoon, ended up taking me several more hours back to the trip because, my mistake was I tried to, you know, I bought the parts to fit into that little 3/8 flex copper line. And I should have known this, you know, it's just, you try and go short and then you end up, you know, it's better just to do it right from the beginning. And so I tried to, this copper line was so corroded and I had to bend it a little bit. And when I did, it cracked right at the bend. And, you know, obviously, I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but if there's a hole in a pipe of any type, they leak a little. Have you guys seen that? I don't know if anybody else has experienced that or not. But if there's a hole in those pipes, then water comes out of them. Have you guys ever run across that? It was strange. But anyway, I basically had to go back to the hardware store again. This was kind of out in the boonies. So, you know, I had this stuff back at the shop. I did not have these things on the truck. And so back to the hardware store again to buy the stuff that I should have bought the first time I was there. And, you know, in order to fix this thing properly, this install ended up finishing at roughly 9 o'clock at night, probably going a little further, a little above and beyond, because my concern was, so I did end up replacing a little more plumbing around that area that was not 100% necessary to replace. My concern was, as we've talked about before on this call, you break it, you buy it, right? I was concerned that with me getting up there and cutting into these pipes and everything else, that this stuff was going to start leaking. You know, that happens. It happens when we put ROs in, we bump a little trap or whatever. So I, lesson learned slowly, I ended up, you know, kind of replumbing a lot of the stuff that I should have, well, it just because I didn't want to have to go back with a leak, you know, and have to say, oh, that's not mine. I didn't do it. If it wasn't leaking before and now it's leaking, then it was mine. You know, I basically bought it. So my lesson in this, plumbing assessments, thorough plumbing assessments, take the extra time to really take a look at that stuff. Sometimes things are going to get missed, which is why it's good to have multiple sets of eyes on it. You know, that's why it's good to train your sales professionals to do a plumbing assessment and train the installers to do a thorough plumbing assessment. But testing the water when I left the house, that was probably, I mean, it was my biggest clue. You know, had I not tested that water, then, you know, I wouldn't have known. And so, you know, and actually the way I really determined that for sure, because it really was a hodgepodge of plumbing trying to get into it and take a look at it. But the system that I put in, it actually, you can see if they're running water, you can see if it's metering. And so I turned off everything else in the house and went down, turned on the cold and looked to see if the system was metering, and in fact it was not. So that told me that, yeah, water's running, not running through the system. So now I have to investigate it and determine why. So lots of stuff there. Lots of stuff. So have you guys run into situations like that? Anybody have similar experiences or anything to add with that sort of a situation? Have you run into it at all?
We've run into the kitchen cold water bypass often here in northern Michigan. And without doing the proper plumbing assessment and adding an RO underneath that sink, plays havoc.
Yeah, right. Right. You know, because then you get, now you've got, I mean, the cost associated with that, if you hook an RO, so I hooked the RO in the basement and had, you know, tapped into a supply line that was not going directly up to the kitchen. But you're right, that water going into that RO would have been even an additional cost, because that water, an RO, no RO, I don't care whose it is going to last very long in that kind of water. Agreed?
Correct.
Yeah.
And also,
yeah,
you know, so one other little nuance is if you are softening water and you're feeding humidification systems that trickle water, a lot of the time the meters on softeners will not catch that. And customers always running out of softened water. What's going on here? And we have a device that will measure that media bed specifically for applications like that. But that is another one where you can get a lot of.
Yeah, if they've got a humidifier or something like that, that's drawing water too slow for the meter to run.
Yeah.
Yeah, and or even a leaky toilet may not.
Leaky toilets and stains, you know, and we've had people put dye in the back of their toilet tank to prove to them that it is a leaky toilet.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
so
I'm sorry, you know, we've done everything. We're testing perfectly at the system, and you're getting these stains, and so we've had to go all the way to putting in, you know, a food-grade type of dye that won't stain anything, but to show them that, hey, this toilet is leaking. We told you that it was leaking. It does need to be corrected.
So what do you do? Because I don't know. So I replaced all the stuff. So the extra plumbing, they did pay me for the extra parts that were not part, because I talked to them about wanting to replace, you know, that little section of plumbing. They bought the parts for that, but the one thing that I was a little uncertain about were the two faucets that, you know, when I cut into those lines, now they're gone. Now, I did give them some iron out. I told them to get some CLR and soak the heads in them a little bit and see if that kind of cleaned it out. But, and I have run into, usually if they're aerators, that's pretty easy to clean, you know, regular aerators. But these were, you know, they got all the inner workings inside the kitchen faucet and stuff, and I mean, I pulled it off and tried to run water backwards through it. The thing was just so iron, disgusting inside that it's, and they were telling me about that one that they were going to replace the faucet anyway. But what do you do if you run into a situation like that where suddenly they don't have water in like a bathroom faucet and you can't get to the aerator? Or, I mean, how do you guys advise them to clean out, you know, how do you do that? Because there's nothing you could do about that. I mean, you can't, that's not, I don't think there's anything you can do there to prevent that, is there? Even a sediment filter on a unit is not going to work because all that stuff is in the line after where the sediment filter would be. So, I just don't know how do you prevent all that crap that's in that line from, you know, and how do you present that to the customer? I guess telling them ahead of time, look, when I cut into the lines, this may shoot up some debris in the lines. You know, you could certainly tell them that. And I demonstrated that to them because I showed them, you know, I told them they needed to flush their water heater. And I went down and showed them, you know, pulled out a little water off the valve down in the bottom of the water heater. And it was as black as night. It was so it was disgusting. It was so gross. And they were like, you know, but I was able to show them all the debris and sediment and stuff down in the bottom of their tank that had come out. And so they understood what was clogging their faucets. They'd certainly seen that. They knew their water was bad. But what do you guys do? You know, have you run into a situation like that where it's completely shut down a faucet and an aerator? I mean, because I could not, the type of bathroom faucet they had, I couldn't fix it. I mean, it was internally all the stuff got in there without completely taking apart that faucet. There was going to be no way to do it. And I, you know, and that was beyond the scope, I felt like. But what do you do when you run into that situation?
You know, it happens, and they're one-offs, and you work with the customer. I don't know how you solve the problem for the customer when it was something that was already in their line and your system's working properly, and they're mad because, you know, they're having to use a different bathroom or they can't run water. every case is unique, and it's just a good, honest conversation with the customer. And if it can be done up front on the plumbing inspection with the salesperson,
yeah.
That is,
I think that's important when
that's
you see water
help.
That I think that's something that I'm going to start doing with every customer that I speak with, and recommending that other people do that as well, that just to let them know, look, this is a possibility. It might even be one of those things where you have a sign off on it, you know, where
so many waivers. It's amazing, the waivers.
Yeah.
The pulling of the refrigerator out, the scratching of the floor, you know,
Or
just drain it outside. I really can't do that. Well, I want it drained outside. Well, you're signing a waiver and you're putting a hole in the wall.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I did. For this customer, I cannot believe how often I see even water treatment companies. This one, the last system they bought, they said they bought from a plumber, and they had glued the drain directly, you know, like run it straight in. I mean, we talked about cross connection, but they put the drain line directly into the sewer line. There was zero air gap or and it was supposedly a plumber that did. If I'm doing a new system, I won't leave a drain like that. I'm going to build them a legal air gap. And so I completely redid their drain for them and everything, and had to do that too. So they definitely, it was a lot better. Everything was a lot better when I left than it was when I got there, but still it bothered me a little bit that they had those faucets that weren't working, you know.
It's amazing to see it tapped in, fitting into a 3-inch sewer line.
Just threaded and
put in. It's
so
like,
these
are you
people,
kidding me?
Paul, these people had built, they used a Y on a 3-inch line, but then they put the drain line directly into, you know, into a, they glued into the Y part, they glued in a fitting and put the drain line into it that way. Like it was essentially the same thing. They did everything. All they would have needed to do is build a trap off of that Y and put an air gap on top, you know?
Yep.
So it's crazy. Everybody else has been pretty quiet. It's been a great conversation between Paul and I. Anybody else have anything to add here or thoughts on this? Anybody? So I do want to tell everybody I am in final scheduling conversation with a pretty cool salt expert. There was a guy at WQA in Long Beach from Morton Salt, but he's not in sales. He was one of the scientists, and they had just completed a bunch of studies, and some of the information that they shared in Long Beach was really interesting just in general terms with salt. So that is coming up. Hopefully we'll get that on the schedule today and announce that coming up soon. So take a look at that. That's going to be a fun one. So any final thoughts or comments? All right, everybody, I appreciate it. We will talk to you next week, if not before. Be safe, everybody. Have a great weekend.
See ya.